thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Oh yeah, it's the Urban Sports Scene. Sorry folks for the delay. I thought I was recording, I really wasn't. Thought we were on air, I wasn't. Now it's official, everything's down. I'm Wally.
I'm Will T, and I'm officially on time since you weren't airing
exactly.
When I came in.
You're right, you're he's on time. My man Will T is on time. And you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Will, you go ahead and do what you say what you said earlier.
Happy New Year's!
All right, so, and I had this whole tirade, so you all missed this, but I had this whole tirade stating that most folks, you know, try to come into New Year with these, I call this BS New Year's resolutions, and they stay true to who they really are. They don't make themselves a better person, a new person. 9 times out of 10. Especially when it comes to, like, dieting or stuff like that.
Yeah, dieting, saving money. Being more social, make more time for your family, not work as hard or work harder. You know, it's all BS. Like I said previously, just be a better you. That's all. Just know who you are. Be accepting and comfortable with who you are, but just try to improve incrementally.
Yeah,
that's all.
I like that. Know you. You know what I mean? That's my main thing.
I think that's
our
hashtag movement. Yeah. Hashtag know you.
And, you know,
2015.
Exactly. And I went to church on New Year's Eve, you know, to break in the new year. And what I like, the message, and it actually, truth be told, is a message that I had before I even went to church. So it's before I even heard the message. It was to remake myself, so restoration. So it's to a point where, you know, to have yourself back to being normal, if that makes any sense.
It does.
You know what I mean?
So nah,
trying to be you again. You
yeah, no, nah, because I think, you know, there's so many different outside influences that can affect a person.
Of course.
That, you know, how you are at heart and naturally can be affected, or you can become jaded by things that happen to you or things you see. So that's important. I think that's a you got a great word, and I think if you try to keep that up through the new year, man, you'll be with hashtag a better you. 2015.
Better you. I like that. Better you hashtag.
I'm starting
like
something
that.
Right here.
I like that. I like the movement. I like that.
I'm starting.
I
want to
see
right
somebody
here.
Tweet that on Twitter. Hashtag a better movement.
Nah,
a better you. Sorry, let's see. You see, I'm acting all slow right now. A better you. Hashtag a better you.
2015.
It's the 2015 stuff.
Yeah, man.
Man, you, me and G, all right, this is off topic. When you see Jew, like, holler at him, because we had, like, the funniest thing in the world. We had, like, about 2015. It's about, like, the new movement of 2015. Like,
okay.
New sayings and stuff. Like, I'm gonna put it this way. We call somebody MG, right? And it stands for, you seen Boomerang, right?
Yeah.
All right, who's the main character in Boomerang?
Eddie Murphy.
All right, what's the name of his character?
Marcus.
Marcus what?
Last
name's with a G.
I forgot.
I always call him MG, but we use that as an adjective to describe people now.
Okay.
Right. Think about that. We'll talk about that after break.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, but anyway, again, New Year's is a blessing. We all made it through another year to talk about sports. Also, our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Unfortunately, one individual who had we'll go ahead to our state.
Let's get into our tradition of pregame.
Okay. Unfortunately, an individual who didn't make it.
He
made it to New Year, but didn't get an opportunity to live out this 2015. And a guy who's inspired so many people and so many, I feel, young black news anchors who want to put in a whole new sense of style or whatever you want to call swag, whatever.
Vernacular.
Yeah, vernacular. That's cool. And Stuart Scott. I mean, he passed away over the weekend. He's a guy, to be honest with you, is a guy that made me think about even wanting to be a sports anchor in the, you know, obviously I'm doing this for fun, but he's a guy who made me want to have me think about being a sports anchor when I knew I couldn't play basketball. You know what I mean? I knew that was going to happen.
So once that dream died?
Once a teacher, one of my teachers told me in high school, like, when she asked me, what do you want to do when you grow up? When you grow up? So I'm going to play in the NBA. And she was like, well, you're not close right now. So I was like, oh, you little jerk. But, but
killed your dreams.
She did, though. She did. I forgot her name, little son of a bitch. But back to it. But Stuart Scott was a guy that I really respected. A guy who made it was so cool. How he delivered his punchlines and just how witty he was. And then when you like watching SportsCenter over the weekend, you see how smart he was and how like dedicated he was to his craft.
Well, I'll say this. Often, even though, you know, death is very sad. Often when, you know, you hear someone who has some celebrity behind their name, they pass away, you know, you're sad for them and their family, right?
Yeah, of course.
When I heard Stuart Scott pass, I was actually saddened myself personally because this is the guy I grew up on. Mm-hmm. You know, ever since 1996, I think, when they started ESPN2, when he was on ESPN2, then he moved to ESPN, mm-hmm. and he was one of the anchors at ESPN. He brought a different dynamic to sports anchor. You know, he brought a whole nother culture. He brought a whole – he actually made it – he crossed over to – not I'm not going to say crossed over, but he brought African-Americans
– That's true.
To the table as far as watching sports on a night-to-night basis. He made it appointment viewing. With just him being him, you know, just him being original, being himself, you know, the way he talked, he was able to relate to the athletes, the way he said the highlights, you know, it was just like you were talking in a barbershop about
sports.
Yeah,
to your homies. To be honest with you, I mean, it was like you were talking to the homies. I know a lot of people use like this, they use the term hip hop. Dialogue. I don't like that term, but to me it was as if you're talking to your friend, and he referenced things that we knew about. You know what I mean? Like songs we knew about back then, and put it into his how he just packages with his highlights. So when I looked at Stuart Scott, I was like, well, that's new. Wow, I've never heard anybody reference this rap group while delivering their highlights and whatnot. So or you know demonstrating. Or analyzing something, some sporting event. So when I heard that, I was like, wow. When he passed away, just like you, I was sad. I was like, wow, like this is a guy that I watched for years. Because when I think of Stuart Scott, it's funny. I think about Stuart Scott and Rich Eisen doing SportsCenter together.
Yeah, that's what I think about too. And I don't know if you actually had a chance to see the NFL Network with Rich Eisen. Man,
I teared up.
I teared up, man. I'm not gonna lie, I teared up, man. That's just genuine love.
I'm a man. I'm gonna tell you that I teared up because how he broke it down, how Rich Eisen broke it down, I posted on our Facebook page too as well.
I'm glad I didn't get a chance to see our Facebook page.
It's okay, but just to know how he breaks it down, like we're talking about a Jewish kid meeting an African American individual from Chicago, and you could see it was just so genuine.
Yeah,
it
man.
Wasn't. It was just like when you watched it, you was like, wow. You hear a lot, you know. You hear people talk about like me and Stu, this, that, and the other, and it's genuine. I'm not saying it's not genuine. It's tough to its core. I'm not saying like okay, they're faking it. But when you see Rich Eisen, you just felt it. You know what I mean?
It really touched me, man. It was I think in life, the reality is all you really have as a constant is your family, and you may have one or two. If you're lucky, you may have one or two friends, people that you deeply touched and impacted, and you can just tell how Rich Eisen, you know, how he spoke about Stuart Scott. He actually impacted him as a person and cared about him deeply, not just as a coworker or a co-anchor, but as a friend and as a human being. So Stuart Scott would definitely deeply be missed. And you know, one thing I could just a side note for me, kind of for me, he taught me is it didn't have anything to do about sports, but just seeing how he was able to be himself in that type of atmosphere. Mm-hmm. It really taught me, you know, going forward when I was, you know, coming into being a young professional, just always be yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and if people adapt to you, they adapt to you. But at the end of the day, if you're true to yourself and then you are passionate and you love your work, it'll always be recognized and, you know, you'll always transcend through whatever is going on and you'll always, live a full life, a great life. So once again, my condolences go out to his two daughters and the rest of his family and, you know, his family, his coworkers and the people he touched and impacted at ESPN. He'll definitely be deeply missed.
Yeah, definitely. All praise to Stuart Scott, RIP, one of the true sports.
A trailblazer.
Yeah, definitely. Two true sports icons in terms of what he did in the world of sports entertainment and also in the world of sports broadcasting and being a sports anchor. A lot of people copy. They're copying the style.
I was telling an associate of mine, I was like, you know how they'll say there's only one, but I think people are continually emulate him. So I'll say that Stuart Scott, there'll only be one Stuart Scott, but his style, his presence, people will try to emulate that going forward. Mm. So he's definitely a trailblazer and made everyone proud watching the late night, watching whenever he was on ESPN.
Yeah, because definitely, his family should be proud of that individual just because, think about it, he's a guy who pretty much made, he was one of them, he was the main, at the time, he was the main anchor.
Yeah, he was the star.
Or the main team, or on the main team, yeah. Put it that way, put on the main team. So, yeah, he was definitely somebody who set the mold in the business. Let's go down to pregame. The Redskins, seems that reports say they hired a new general manager.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you. I wanted to put this at the last, for the last part of the
pregame,
because I had a lot to talk about.
That's okay. You can still talk about it. I can't even say his name right.
McLaughlin. Whatever it is.
Yeah, McLaughlin. McLaughlin.
For all intents and purposes, it seems like a good hire. One that, you know, you and the rest of Washington fans should be happy about, just because of his track record. You know, he basically, from 2005 to 2010, he built that San Francisco 49ers team. And if you think about it, that's during the time that Mike Singletary was there. But I think everyone knew that there was a lot of talent on that roster. Yeah. And that's exactly why Jim Harbaugh was able to come in and make a couple minor tweaks as far as he made wholesale changes the way they did things, but as far as turnover on the roster, it was minimal because it was a very talented roster. It's just that Mike Singletary didn't get the most out of him.
Yeah.
Then he went to Seattle, and he helped Pete Carroll build a championship.
Uh-huh.
So he has a very strong track record from all the research I've done. He's very good, a great talent evaluator. So Washington fans should have something to be happy about. You know, one thing you can say about Dan Snyder, once the fans complain about something, he will make a change to appease them to keep that money coming in. No, seriously, if you think about it, to keep that money coming in and give Washington fans a glimmer of hope heading into next year.
A glimmer of hope.
A glimmer of hope, yeah. I mean, think about it. You won 4 games this year. You won 3 games the previous year. What did you have to – it's looking like the quarterback isn't turning out to be the star that you wanted him to be.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the quarterback, what other young talent do you have on that roster that you can get truly excited about?
That's easy. Other than the quarterback?
Yeah. Who, I mean
– young talent?
Yeah. That's exceptional that you'll look to next year and be
Trent,
like
– Trent Williams is young and exceptional.
Okay.
What do you mean, skill position?
Yeah.
DeSean Jackson.
Like I said –
DeSean Jackson is exceptional.
Jackson had a good year. Yeah.
DeSean Jackson is consistently exceptional. He did, in Philadelphia, other than made him one season when he had an off season. He's always been a playmaker. So DeSean Jackson's always going to be that type of dude.
I mean, there's very few elements on that roster for you to be overly excited
Alpha
about.
I'm always excited about Ryan Kerrigan. It gets better every year. Honestly, Keenan Robinson is a guy I'm really excited about.
Keenan Robinson and maybe Rashad Breland.
Breland.
So maybe like 6 guys you have you're excited about.
Oh, yeah,
but exactly. I mean, overall, heading into this offseason, were you okay? You're excited about those 6 players, but as the team as a whole, were you excited about the prospects heading into next year?
There's only 2 like positions I'm not excited about.
What's that?
You already know it's a quarterback. And honestly, the safety position. Everything else, I feel like you can handle in the draft.
Okay. Well, we'll see. But this guy, Scott McCullen, or whatever, I'm not going to.
Yeah, no, I'm going to keep messing with
Scotty boy.
Let's call him Scott.
Scott. He, you know, you get him in this early, so, you know, obviously he'll have some. His fingerprints will be on the draft, and it'll be on, you know, free agency and selecting undrafted free agents and things like that. You know, he'll have to assess the scouting department and the scouts in it and just how the organizational structure of Washington, of their football operations. But it gives you a glimmer of hope. And, you know, there's also word that Wade Phillips.
Yeah, Wade Phillips will be interviewing too.
He's interviewing
tomorrow.
For the defense. No, Ed.
I thought Wade's open for tomorrow. The job for tomorrow.
He might be in there tomorrow. But the linebackers coach for San Fran, he's coming in this week.
Okay.
Yeah. For a defensive coordinator interview. So I mean, there's some things to, you know, get you bubbly and get you excited
about. Yeah.
And you know, it's been three or four off seasons since you won the off season championship.
We haven't done that in a while.
That's what I say. It's been like 3 or 4. So you know, he could potentially be gearing up for that. So
you know if.
What's
if
that?
If we get Sue, then we win the offseason.
Yeah, if you get Sue. But
I
think he goes to the Giants.
I think
he'll be a Giant.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think he'll be a Redskin.
I think he'll be a Giant. I mean, it would make sense because you need an interior pass rushing presence, and you know, from what I understand, if Wade Phillips is your guy, he plays a lot of, even though it's a 3-4, it's a lot of 4-3 principles.
Yeah.
So I mean, and Ndamukong Suh, I mean, he wants to be paid like J.J. Watt, and there's one team that we know that has a history of playing players like they want to.
Hey.
We know Daniel Snyder's tell Bruce Allen, listen, make it work. Just make it cap friendly as possible. But you know, not to ramble on, but this also helps Bruce Allen. This puts him off the hook. This helps him save his job. He goes back to being the president of operations, and he goes back to defending the name, picking the uniforms, putting together the homecoming activities.
Yeah, it's very important. These are very important.
I'm not downplaying any of it. I'm not. You know, he does what he does best, which is contract negotiations and observation of the salary cap and NFL rules, league rules, and mandates and things like that. So, I think it's a win-win for everyone involved thus far.
I'm excited. I'm excited about the hire. I mean, we're talking. Look at his track record. He's the main reason for the Seattle Seahawks drafting people like Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson. This guy did
Golden Tate.
These are guys that weren't high. I mean, in terms of draft board and many other teams high on the board, and he found him, and he's good, and he's actually good in scouting development. He has his own scouting.
Bobby Wagner.
You know what I mean? And this nigga, the San, like you mentioned, San Fran. That's a team that he pretty much helped build anyway. He was the former GM, and he helped build that team. So you look at that. We're talking about like last season. I mean, I heard this on the radio, so I'm like I'm copying it, but it's the truth. Last season, in that NFC Championship game, that's pretty much all him. Between the two tough teams in that game, so you bring that, and you see what those two franchises have been over the last couple of years, other than San Francisco's this season, but over the last couple of seasons, those two teams have been pretty dominant. So if you can bring that edge to the Redskins in terms of personnel, bring that type of football over here, that'd be very interesting because that's old school, and we grew up watching NFC East football.
Yeah, that's Joe Gibbs football,
old school NFC. Yeah, so beat you up. Outman you, be more intense than the next man. So,
well, if that's what Jay Gruden wants,
that's the whole thing. Is he? And that's the thing that's going to always it's going to be interesting as well. But though they did say that he has a good relationship with the Grudens, so either that's John. Well, they say that's John Gruden probably, but still, that's his brother. So you would think that.
Oh yeah, the NFL is built on nepotism and relationships.
So, but I do agree with you. It's up to Jay Gruden. Is Jay Gruden that type of coach that's a physical coach?
Yeah, okay. Does he want a physical run game? I mean, in Cincinnati, they had a very physical offensive line, but they didn't really run the ball at you that much. They got away from the run when Jay Gruden was calling plays. So, I mean, that, you know, it's still a lot to be sorted out, but once again, Washington football fans should be extremely happy with this pick. I mean, with this pickup, and also there's talk of AJ Smith still potentially joining the organization.
And AJ Smith is cool. It's good friends with who'd you just mention?
Yeah,
The defense. Wade Phillips. So it all works together. It works hand in hand. This definitely could be a day we all remember in Washington Redskins history. In terms of the year, the time. This is the point in time they turned it around. In the offseason, they finally got what everybody's been crying about, a GM, an actual GM who knows football.
Yeah, so, I mean, kudos to Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen, all those guys finally getting it together. The fans called for it. There was an uproar over it this offseason, and we all know Danny Boy gives the fans what he wants.
That's the truth. That is
the truth. He does. You can say anything you want about him, but he does keep his ear to the streets, and he knows what the fans want.
Yeah.
And most of the time, he appeases the fans because he knows he has to keep that stadium packed.
Yeah, got to keep the fan base happy. They pay.
Yeah, they do.
It is what it is. It's a business. I mean, it is for us fans, we want this team to win, but it is a business for him. If he knows if he's making everybody unhappy, especially in a loyal market to a football team, to a point where they're starting to not come to games, he's got to do what he has to do what it takes. He has to.
Yeah, we all know that, but I just want Scott to know that this can be a cruel town if you don't win.
Yeah, XRG3.
And you know, we all know that he's had past problems with alcoholism that made him step away from. I just request of the fans, please don't bring his personal past demons into. Absolutely, they'll be on talk radio talking about, oh, he's back hitting the bottle. They'll be making jokes if, oh, well, If they don't win, RG3 will make them hit the bottle. I've already heard it already.
It had to be on 167 The Fan. It couldn't be on. I'm mentioning the radio stations. It couldn't be like 980 because 980 works with Daniel Snyder anyway.
I've heard it already. I've heard it from fans already. So, people trying to crack jokes. But, everyone has their own personal problems. Don't be cruel. Give the man time. Allow him to grow and evaluate things. And hopefully he'll be able to turn football operations around. Because, look, let's be honest. I'm a native Washingtonian. This city is so much liver when that team is winning.
Is it true?
That's the reality of it.
It's real.
And I want to see people happy on Monday mornings to go back to work.
I know. People like me, I need to be happy going to work.
Even though listening to the local ESPN affiliate in the morning is hilarious when they aren't winning.
But yeah, the callers are so depressed.
Yes, it's so hilarious.
I thought I was depressed, but the callers act like they're about to jump off a bridge on that thing. But
they do.
Yeah, but I posed a question: are Skins fans happy? I went on our Facebook page. My man Jeremy Gordon said, "How can it not? Now we just need a quarterback, 4 offensive linemen, 2 D linemen, 2 linebackers, 1 corner, and 3 safeties." The Bama said 3 safeties. Sorry, the Bama means the dude for me. Go ahead, continue.
Well, no, he pretty much summed it up. You need all of that. It's easy for people to say that, but I think the one area that this team was lacking in this year is depth.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Because when you had injuries to certain players or you had players underperforming, you didn't have anyone to be that next man up to step in and kind of, plug and play. You look at the teams that are successful. San Fran, they had injuries.
Yeah.
Next man up.
Next man up.
New England, next man up.
Oh, man. Arizona.
Arizona, next man up. Pittsburgh, even though their playoff run ended,
Little
next
run.
Man up. Yeah, okay, we'll talk about that. 1-3, how about that?
And I suck. Believe me. Oh, I should have been 2-2. I should have been 2-2, and if it wasn't for some type of shame.
We'll get into that later on.
Yeah. But my man George, also on our Facebook page, my man George said, "Yes, it does. A real general manager with power who is from the outside and can take a fresh perspective at this organization and roster. It's a small step, but still a good step."
All right, so,
it seems like the fan base is
happy. It seems like the fan base from just the limited pool that we have seem happy.
Yeah, I don't want to read all of them because I'll be here for days. But, yeah, it seems that everybody seems happy. But anyway, let's go down to pregame. Rams are rumored to be moving to L.A.
It makes sense. The owner, Kroenke, he purchased a large parcel of land in L.A., he wants to there's still some environmental tests that have to be approved, and there's still some approval from councilmen and things like that. But everything looks like it's on schedule for him to be able to move the Rams back to L.A. I understand why they moved from L.A., but I don't understand why. It's all cyclical. It's all a cycle.
It all goes back. The Rams always, L.A., Oakland was in L.A.
Yeah,
I personally. Kind of makes no sense. Everybody's going back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, I personally don't think there needs to be a professional football team in L.A. because there's too much to do in L.A.
Yeah, they got USC. They love USC.
Yeah, they have a semi-professional team in USC. So you have USC, you had the Lakers, you had the Clippers. L.A. is like Miami. There's a lot going on outside of sports that doesn't necessarily lead it to be one of those extremely overly passionate fan base.
So what's the difference
between
LA and New York? New York has a bunch of teams. They're supposed to be like the next Mecca in terms of the cities.
New York is cold. People want to come in and watch games and things like that. LA is a sunny, hot, beautiful. They're beautiful people everywhere, but there are, a lot of beautiful people in L.A.
Yeah, I know.
Excuse me, beautiful women specifically.
Yeah, exactly. That in Miami.
Yeah, so, it lends itself to be one of those towns that doesn't have that ravenous sports following like you would find in Cleveland or Philadelphia or with the Green Bay Packers and things like that.
No, you're right. If you watch Laker games, I'm going to mention because that's why I grew up watching Laker games on TV. You see how late the fans come into the games, especially celebrities.
It's just a place to be seen.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about cheering. It's more about to be seen.
Yeah,
Even if anybody watched Laker games in the past, if it wasn't like Showtime and the Lakers with Magic Johnson or even you know Kobe and Shaq, if we were going through the point with like Nick Van Exel, Eddie Jones.
It was cold and lonely during those Saddell Threat and Cedric Ceballos times.
They didn't get out there and didn't get rowdy, but it took them a while to get rowdy. You know what I mean? It just took them a while.
Right.
So, but yeah, I agree with Will. I do think it's big for the NFL. It's something they want. For some strange reason, they want LA as a player in the NFL. But I do agree with Will. Like, I think it's a little overrated. I feel that they think that it's going to bring so much money and revenue to the team. But I don't see the difference. I don't see the big. I don't think it'll be as big as what they think.
Yeah, it's the second biggest market, and they figure we need to at least have two teams in the second biggest market.
Yeah, so. But obviously the first
is New York.
Well, the first five games, or depending how this team competes, it's going to be big because they're coming back, so the fans will come out initially. But it's always about what's going to happen in year two, what's going to happen in year three. You know what I mean? So
absolutely, I totally agree with you.
So we'll see how that pans out. Anyways, also down the pregame, MLB Hall of Fame Hall of Fame had their selections. Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, John Smoltz, and Craig Biggio all made the Hall of Fame. That's excluding the folks of PEDs, you know, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens. Who should be in the Hall of Fame who didn't make it this year?
I don't even know who. To be honest with you, I used to familiarize myself with the ballot, but ever since, to be honest with you, when Barry Bonds wasn't voted in on the first ballot,
he was like annoyed with it.
It's a joke to me. And I understand that, you know, the PEDs, the reality is he's never tested positive. They couldn't convict him. So baseball writers, stop being holier than thou and trying to prosecute and persecute him and keeping him out of the Hall of Fame. The man's numbers, all you have to do is give it the eye test and look at his numbers. The man belongs in the Hall of Fame. Just that simple and easy.
Everybody, if I stand with the situation, I think, you know, baseball as a whole was cheating, so why punish the players anyway? Period. You allowed them, you wanted them to take steroids, so it didn't matter to me. I mean, chicks dick and long ball. You already knew you knew what was going down. So for Bug Selig, again, I'm going to always state this anytime when this part comes down. And for Bug Selig and other writers to only single out the players, it's amazing to me. So my question is, when it's time to elect Bug Selig into the Hall of Fame, will you do the same thing? Because he knew what was going on. Will you say, okay, Bug Selig, we don't want you in the hall? Will you do that?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, they created an environment where they enabled players. Yeah,
they knew what they were doing. They were making money. It's all
it was
about
them,
money.
It was them in the players' union. They enabled. Yeah. They created an environment where it was conducive to taking PEDs.
Yeah. I mean, to me, again, they knew what they were doing. It wasn't something that, in my opinion, they knew what they were doing because they knew it was going to make them money, and that's what the main thing is. In all sports, we get in college football, whatever, college football, basketball. When it comes to some of these conspiracy teams, like the Lakers beating the Sacramento Kings years ago, it's all about money. It's all about ratings. So, in this regard, the same thing applies. They were hitting home runs. They had to juice up. The baseball wasn't doing as well, so they juiced up. Barry Bonds. I mean, it's Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa. They carried the lead. They made money for him.
They brought baseball back.
Yeah, they brought it
back.
To
be honest with you.
Exactly. But to go back to what I stated with the question, my only for the guy who didn't make it, I know people have talking about Mike Piazza, who I was a fan. Mike Piazza shouldn't make it. He deserves to make it. But for me, you call me a homer or whatnot, he actually played for the Yankees as well.
Mike Mussina
is a guy who at that point in time in his career, in that era, he didn't play with the Braves, who were a sexy team because they had Maddox, Glavine, Smoltz on that team. But Mike Mussina was just as dominant as any of those pitchers. Maddox was a beast. But other than Maddox, Smoltz is in the Hall. Smoltz made it to the Hall of Fame. Smoltz has about 213 wins, I believe. Mike has about 270 wins.
It's all about the perception of not winning the title.
Exactly. We're talking about a guy, even when he was in baseball, and it's not like the Orioles were hitting playing for the Orioles, excuse me, he had like the highest winning percentage for a while with the Baltimore Orioles as an active player, the highest winning percentage. So he's a guy to me that deserves to make it. I think this is the second time on the ballot, if my memory serves me correctly, and he's not in the Hall of Fame. I'm just scared that the next couple of years, we're going to forget all about him. He'll be off the ballot. And he didn't even reach 50%, which, again, this guy if you watch him when he was on his game, and when I mean on his game in his prime, there weren't many people who could hit Mike Mussina. I mean, Mike Mussina was filthy. I'm going to always remember the year we made it to the postseason and we played the Cleveland Indians, and it was a game to get to the World Series. Obviously, Armando Benitez screwed this up, but Mike Mussina, he took the ball, he had it, he had Game 7, and I mean, this dude. It was Game 6 or Game 7. I don't really remember in terms of which game it was. But it was the elimination game. And this dude had like about 15 strikeouts. And he went about seven to eight innings strong. And to have to see that type of performance, that to me is a Hall of Fame performance. And for him not to be a Hall of Famer really annoys me. But, again, my choice would be Mike Mussina. It could be a homer, but...
I mean, but then again, that's why we have this forum, so you can keep it going and you can voice your opinion and you can get on the baseball writers' nerves and you can continually campaign for Mike Mussina.
Yeah, I'm going to campaign for Mike Mussina like I campaigned for Randall Cunningham to be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay, yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah, keep it going.
I'm going to, man.
Exactly, man.
I'm going to write Peter King again.
Hey.
He responded to me last time. We had a good dialogue, too. He was like, yeah, I can see how you would think Randall is a Hall of Famer. Comparing to Troy Aikman's stats.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that Randall Cunningham's a guy that should be in the Hall, but you know,
he's a trendsetter.
He's a trendsetter. He was the first of
his kind. Well, yeah.
not of his kind,
but you know what I mean. Like, put it like this: if it wasn't Randall Cunningham, there would be no Michael Vick. There would be no, in my opinion, there would be no Donovan McNabb initially.
Yeah, so
Randall Cunningham is very influential in football. They had a pregame. This is a local thing. Maryland's star wide receiver Stephon Diggs there are reports that he will be entering the NFL draft.
I think he could come back next year, and I think he would be a little bit higher. Right now, they said the draft advisory board advising that he'd be like a third, maybe fourth round pick. Stephon Diggs is what they reported in the Washington Post. Stephon Diggs, for anyone who doesn't know, he was one of those local products. You know, he's the first, I think, one of Randy Edsall's first recruits who was local and was a big time star and was being courted by everyone. He decided to stay home, play in his backyard, and try to take this Maryland program to the next level. Anyone who's seen the kid play knows he's electric, with the ball in his hand in open field. I wish him the best. I think he's going to do good at the next level with his speed and his swiftness. You know, some people have compared him to what's the guy's name?
Not D-Jax.
Not D-Jax. Some people say he's kind of like a Mike Wallace with his speed.
Okay.
Be able to beat you deep. I'm not going to sit up here and say I've watched a lot of Maryland Terrapins college football, because I haven't. But from what I've seen of him, he stands out. You definitely knew when you was watching him, that kid's going to be a pro. He's going to be playing on Sunday. So congratulations to him on a career well done at the University of Maryland, and good luck at the next level.
I mean, this is a guy who was recruited by Florida, so you already know how good he was. I mean, how good of a football player he was in college. And now he's going to take
Not Mike Wallace, but Percy Harvin.
Percy Harvin, yeah. That's a good one. This is a guy who, again, like I said, was recruited by Florida, and he would definitely be a first round pick if he had quarterback play to help show his talents in Maryland.
True that.
Because he's an explosive player, and
but still, you know, he still got to go through the draft process. So you never know he can shoot up the board.
Yeah, because if he runs a particular speed, shows his hand skills, route running. If he runs a 4.3, he's golden.
He runs a 4.3 or 4.4.
That's not even a fourth round grade. Look at the Hayward Bay guy. Yeah, at first round.
He was a top 10 pick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he runs the speed that people think he can run, if you watch him play, he's a hands guy. Hayward Bay was fast and it was electric in Maryland, but he was always chest. What it means that he just caught the ball with his chest. He never really caught it with his hands. So this Stephon Diggs, I think, will be definitely depending on the team he gets drafted by. He could be a game changer in the NFL.
He just needs to go to the right team.
Yeah, definitely.
Go to the right team, right coaching, and he'll be a star.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, it's about time for commercial break. When we get back from break, we'll be talking about the NFL playoffs. Wally went 1-3. Will T went
3-1.
3-1. It's the Urban Sports Saints.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm gonna smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
So, I type a text to a girl I used to see, saying that I chose this cutie pie with whom I wanna be. And I apologize if this message gets you down. Then I CC'd every girl that I'd CC round town. And hate to see y'all frown, but I'd rather see her smiling. Witness all around me, true. But I'm no island, peninsula maybe. Makes no sense, I know crazy. Give up all this that's in my lap, no looking back. Spaceships don't come equipped with rear view mirrors. They dip as quick as they can. The atmosphere is now ripped. I'm so like a pip. I'm glad it's night. So the light from the sun would not burn me on my bum when I shoot the moon. High jump the broom like a preemie out the womb. My partner yelling too soon. Don't do it.
Reconsider. Read some litter. Sure. Next show. I ain't cursing. Okay. We're on. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
Yes,
again,
sir.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website. The website is www.waleo.podbean.com. Waleo is spelled W-A-L-E-O. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Grid Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Stiller Fan. I'm going to try to be on the show this Thursday after practice. I have to coach my kids early, and hopefully later on that evening you'll hear me on the show. Again, our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. Okay, let's talk about the NFL playoffs. First game, Arizona lost to the Carolina Panthers. Arizona lost to the Carolina Panthers. I picked Arizona. Will picked Carolina. So Will, I'll let you start off. Your assessment of the game.
Assessment of the game. I thought that, as we stated on the air previously last Tuesday, I said that Cam Newton would be the difference in this game. Quarterback, specifically quarterback play. And I'm not going to say Cam Newton went and lit it up, but I definitely say he made enough plays, unlike Ryan Lindell.
Lindley. Yeah.
He made enough plays to put his team on top, coupled that with a strong run game, pretty sturdy defense. That's why I picked Carolina, and I was right.
Yeah, you were right. Arizona, they fought. Except when they had those two touchdowns, they took the lead. Obviously, the fumble by Ted Ginn Jr. definitely hurt this team. They weren't equipped to have to score multiple touchdowns or like be down.
One question: you gonna keep the music going?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. All right.
Yeah. I was just
asking.
Yeah, because you ain't like it. You don't like
No, it's not that. I didn't know if you usually turn.
No,
down,
you
so
gotta turn it down. Like it depends. Cause this isn't curses and bother me.
Okay,
so
all right.
When it's curses, like,
keep it going
kinda,
then.
Like, yeah. So don't worry, it's about to end. So when it's about to end, that's my I turn it down.
Completely. Okay, no problem.
That game was just a defensive struggle. To me, it was more just how bad Lindley was rather than what Cam Newton did. Nelly was horrible. I mean, I knew he was bad, but he was terrible. Like, why not play Thomas, the young kid at Virginia Tech?
That's how I don't bad know, he was. But they had a playoff record of net
utility.
77 yeah, total utility. Yards of offense.
Terrible.
It just goes to show you in today's NFL, you can have an amazing defense all you want, but if you don't have an offense that can at least keep you off the field and not turn the ball over and be opportunistic, you're in for a short run in the playoffs. The rules lend itself to offensive football. No matter how much we like watching defense, a good defensive team, a good physical football team in a football game, offense in today's NFL will always prevail. And it did on Saturday night. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how they pan out against Seattle, because that'll be two physical teams. We all know that Seattle's the Legion of Boom with Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and those guys against Carolina's lack of receivers. Outside of Calvin Benjamin. You know, you got Greg Olsen at tight end.
He's a beast, which is good. Yeah. Pro bowler.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do to take away Carolina's strength. We all know Seattle's really tough against the run. And they you know, those defensive backs that allows that front seven to get to the quarterback without bringing a lot of pressure. So it'll be that, you know. It's not the sexiest game on the schedule.
We're going to pregame that too later.
Yeah, it's not the sexiest game on the schedule, but it's a game I'll look forward to seeing on, Saturday? It comes on Saturday night, right? That game's on Saturday? Yeah, that game's Saturday night.
Game's on Saturday.
It'll be interesting to see.
We're going
to
pregame that game as well. But, yeah, again, it's and I'll talk about that. But to me, this playoff, the whole playoff run is going to be dependent for this – dependent on Cam Newton, which I agree with you. This whole playoff run is going to be dependent on Cam Newton. He has to play better than he played against the Arizona Cardinals. He had players wide open. He was missing them. He wasn't as accurate as I've seen him before in prior years. But Cam Newton, I agree, did enough for this team to win. But I hold Cam Newton in such high regard because I am a fan of Cam Newton. I just expect him to play better than I saw against Arizona, because Arizona, he did have guys open. It was like he didn't have guys open. He had Olsen open all day. So we'll see. We'll see Cam. We'll talk about Cam and the Cardinals when they play this Seattle. But let's go to the next game that we need to talk about. It was the Baltimore Ravens against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Baltimore Ravens beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh. I'll let you go first.
I definitely want to go first. I didn't watch a lot. I didn't watch any of the games. Really.
Okay.
But
I'll talk about
around 11:30 Saturday night after the game. I received a text, and this text stated, "Leader of Men." And who was that aforementioned text from? But my guy right here to the right.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Wally.
Yeah, I told Jude to text it for me, but he wouldn't do it. He's acting a little punk. I was about to leave the apartment. I was like, man, just text real quick and say "Leader of Men," because I was on my way to the strip club. So I was like, go ahead.
So you know, I didn't see the text until like 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just thinking, I was like, wow, this guy's gonna, he got one right.
Now, yeah, I got one.
Yeah, and I text you back the next morning. Yeah. I was like, you got one right.
Yeah, I know. See, it wasn't about the competition. It was just about like my feelings about Mike Tomlin. Like this is what my feelings about Mike Tomlin. It wasn't about actually the picks. It was about Mike Tomlin personally. I like Mike Tomlin because I do think he's a motivator. But I don't think he's, to me, he's still, this team, his success, his success to me is still based on what Cowher brought to this team. So it's still Cowher's team. Now since this team is getting older and they need to bring in new talent, they need to be coached this particular way, this team isn't the same. You know what I mean? So it's not, he's not taking over, he's not having Bill Cowher's pieces now riding this thing through. Troy Polamalu's getting old. The interior, not the linebackers, but the interior isn't the same. I don't know. They don't have Hampton anymore, right?
No, they don't have Hampton anymore.
But it's not the interior is not the same. They don't get pushed. They don't stop the run like they used to. So to me, Mike Tomlin's gonna have to like change. It's either he's gonna have to do some other things to kind of get this team going. Maybe he's gonna have to include his his style, which was, I believe, in years past, he was a cover two type of defensive background. So maybe he's going to have to do that some more. This team isn't that team, so he's going to have to act, to me, impose his will even more. I think he imposed his attitude to motivate, but at the same time, I think now he has to impose his beliefs and his philosophy on this team defensively. Because now your reports, you know, he's not sure Dick LeBeau's going to be coming back next season anyway. So,
well, yeah, I mean, if once Dick LeBeau, if he does leave, and Dick LeBeau is definitely a guy that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, when he totally agree. When totally agree.
As a player and as a contributor or defensive coordinator, it'll really be his. I mean, you know. Well, you take away that element of Dick LeBeau, then we'll see that it'll be his team. I mean, I think the offense has kind of been reshaped in the way he wants it. And they had a lot of success this year. You know, Antonio Brown is probably the best receiver in the game. Le'Veon Bell.
Best small receiver in the game. I still give that to Calvin Johnson.
Okay, I mean, the numbers don't lie.
No, but he's explosive, though.
Numbers don't lie.
They kind of do sometimes.
Okay, well, Le'Veon Bell, the things he did this season, proving that he, if not, the best, one of the top five best all-around backs in the game.
Once Adrian Peterson stops,
I just said this season.
I'm with you.
Big Ben, he threw for almost 5,000 yards this year. That offense with Martavius Bryant and also with Marcus Wheaton, they're really starting to open things up vertically and also underneath with the speed.
It's a lot of weapons offensively.
It's a lot of weapons. So, only thing, if Mike Tomlin is able to put his stamp on that defense the way that he did in Tampa as their defensive coordinator when they won the championship.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think he would. Wait, no, he was the defensive backs coach.
When they won
that championship under Gruden, if he's able to transfer him in the way those defensive backs played,
mm-hmm.
he could be in for something special.
Yeah, let me get back to the game. I'm not going like but Tom.
Yeah, yeah, let's
player.
Go. Yeah, let's go
back to the game.
Back.
It's just something about Baltimore. To me, Baltimore playing Pittsburgh of late. I mean, and I'm not talking about the postseason. I think people bring up the postseason. Being within the regular season, they just don't seem scared of Pittsburgh anymore. They're the rivals, but they feel very confident when they play the Steelers. And that's when I said this. You know, when the Steelers beat the Bengals, I was like, wow. Yeah, this is not a matchup they really want. Like, they would prefer, like Cincinnati, I feel like Cincinnati would have a better chance beating Baltimore compared to Pittsburgh being Baltimore.
Well, I'll say this. They had Haloti Ngata back.
Yeah, that too. That means the world.
Yeah, that means the world. With him in the middle of that defense, playing on that defensive line, that means the world. Then you couple in with Terrell Suggs. Mm-hmm. Who's bringing the pass rush, and then C.J. Mosley, who had an outstanding season as a rookie, and then Joe Flacco's back to playing he played for one game anyway, the type of football in the playoffs that he did during that magical run for the playoffs uh-huh. for them, their Super Bowl win, and you know all that was a recipe for a win Saturday night in Pittsburgh. So you know this Saturday night will definitely be a matchup that everyone will want to, and we'll preview it again later on in the rundown, that everyone want to see, because it's the Patriots versus the Ravens. And every game they've played in the playoffs the last three times has been extremely close. It's come down to one late play in the fourth quarter. These teams historically, you know, have played each other pretty tough. And I can't wait to see that game this Saturday.
Yeah, I totally agree. I can't wait to see it. But it just shows you, again, we're talking about some of the keys in that game. The running for set had a good game. Joe Flacco was able to do things in terms of finding the tight ends, and prolonging drives, and even getting third downs, executing on third downs. Torrey Smith produced. And that's a guy who always gives Pittsburgh problems. I mentioned that on the show last week.
Yep.
That's a guy who will always give that team problems. And again, when you have overrated corners like a Knight Taylor, and which again I think that's something Tom is going to need to address, is to actually getting a true number one cornerback rather than just like saying that Ike Taylor is going to be my best cornerback checking the best wide receiver on the opposing fields. I mean, on the opposite end. So I look at it like, all right, it's either you're going to get a better cornerback within the draft, or try to sign someone via free agency. Darrell Revis is out there. Maybe they want to fork over some money and actually pay to get a true lockdown corner.
Yeah, we'll see. It all depended on, we know Pittsburgh historically doesn't pay free agents the big bucks, and also with the type of scheme he wants to play back there, you know, if they want to continue to play that cover too, you don't need a lockdown corner.
Yeah, you don't. And again, this is like the only one. This is the only one I got right, like Will referenced. So we're gonna go down to the next one. So obviously, I got this one wrong. It's Cincinnati Bengals versus the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell you were thinking.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to tell you, man. I was just going – I thought A.J. Green was going to play. So this, I just on the whole notion that A.J. Green was going to play. I didn't know his concussion was that thorough.
Well, even if he had played, it's Andy Dalton. It's the playoffs.
A.J. Green.
It's a recipe for disaster.
Now, to Andy Dalton's case, though, to his credit, though, he didn't make the big mistake that I usually see him. You know.
Oh no, he didn't make the big mistake. But then again, being a quarterback that's paid $16 million a year, he didn't make any plays either.
Yeah, he didn't make any plays.
Yeah, he didn't make any plays. A $16 million a year quarterback, you got to make a play.
Be honest with you, guys, we're getting open though. They weren't getting no.
Well, you got to extend the. You got to.
He's not that dude. You know, he didn't extend no
but,
play.
But hey, you got to extend the play. You got to make something happen, man.
Guys got to get open, though.
You got to motivate your wide receivers to get open. I mean, Jermaine Hill had a decent game. Don't get me wrong.
He averaged like 3 yards a carry.
No, I think it was like four.
Like three. He had that. His game wasn't that good.
At one point during the game,
he looked good in the beginning. In the second half, they shut him down. Like seriously. They had to stop the run.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, I thought that. Indianapolis's defense coupled with Andrew Luck, that would be enough to make enough plays. And whether people want to admit it or not, that Indy defense is pretty dangerous because they have a lot of options. You have Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener. Offense. You have Dwayne Allen, Kobe Fleener at the tight ends. Then you have Reggie Wayne. Then you have T.Y. Hilton.
You got Hakeem Nicks
and Dante Moncrief. He has a lot of options, you know. Even though that run game, well, the run game was working for them Saturday with Tippett, but with Tippett.
Who's Tippett?
Tipton, the backup running back
for the
Colts.
Oh, you mean Heron?
Nah, Dan Heron.
Heron was the starter.
Yeah, Heron was the starter, but who was the – it was the another guy.
They ran Tippett, too? I know Heron was. Yeah. Heron was doing all right until he fumbled.
Yeah, he was – yeah, Heron had a good game, but the other running back, I think, came in, played decently, too. So they gave him a real good, nice 1-2 punch on the ground. Trent Richardson, once again, was nowhere to be seen.
He was hurt. I mean, he was ill. Supposedly he was ill.
Supposedly.
He was ill.
But everyone's going to get another game that they were dying to see. Andrew Luck versus Peyton Manning means a lot.
It does mean a lot. That game, we'll talk about that game too as well. But I'll just say this: Andrew Luck is healthy. Peyton Manning does not look healthy. But the only thing is the Colts play good. That defense plays a lot better at home or in a dome where they can kind of pin their ears and go after the quarterback. But again, this game was, I agree with Will. Andrew Luck just looked dominant. He was just that bad man, the baddest man on the planet at the quarterback position. Like I said last week, that guy's something else. And we're looking at it. I'm talking about, that's a defense that made Peyton Manning look bad, and Andrew Luck tore that thing up like nobody's business. The Bengals put no pressure on Andrew Luck. They gave him time in the pocket, and Andrew Luck just did what he always. He normally does. A, he extended the play. B, if you give him time, he's going to look for that big play. And he's going to look for that big play. He's going to execute it. And also the difference also between Andrew Luck in this game and compared to the regular season is Andrew Luck didn't make that big mistake. He didn't turn the ball over. You could tell he was conscious about, all right, I'm not going to turn the ball over. I'm going to take my check downs. If I do see it quick, I'm going to go deep, but I'm not going to take that big risk.
One more thing I wanted to talk about that's connected to Cincinnati Bengals. I stated before previously that if they didn't win, it may be time for a shakeup.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
In Cincinnati. I don't really see it happen because I think Mike Brown is too comfortable with Marvin Lewis. And from my understanding, Marvin Lewis and his daughter and Mike Brown's daughter are essentially running the football operations there.
Okay, you said something else.
No, they're essentially running the whole football operations there.
Oh, with some Phil Jackson type stuff.
They're running the whole football operations. So it may be, maybe we get a surprise, but I don't think this late into the game, with already six coaching vacancies. We'll see another one. But I do think, as I stated, you know, I do think you have to start to consider a possible change with Marvin Lewis at the head, even though I love Hugh Jackson at the, as the offensive coordinator.
He's looking for a head coaching job.
Maybe you elevate Hugh Jackson to the head coaching job. But I don't see that happening, though. But I think, you know, he's been on the clock in my mind. But I think now even this, what, that's four playoff games in a row. You haven't won in during the first round. Marvin Lewis, bruh, you officially on the clock.
Marvin Lewis, again, is a great coach. I mean, we're talking about a Bengals team. We're talking about the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's just be real. Who were the Bengals before Marvin Lewis got to town? I mean, obviously, he's getting to the postseason, four straight years. Two different regimes. What I mean by that is not his regime, but two different regimes offensively. You know, first it was Ocho Cinco, Charles Johnson, and Chad Johnson. Excuse me,
T.J. Hushmanzada.
T.J. Hushmanzada and Carson Palmer, and they were looking like they were ascending to do some special things, almost like you saw Peyton Manning, Reggie Wayne, and Marvin Harrison. But Carson Palmer got hurt. Now with this new team, with Andy Dalton and A.J. Green, you're like, oh wow, he built this thing back up again. So. To me, I'm impressed with Marvin Lewis as a coach and what he can do, a guy who can build a team and make him competitive. Now, is Andy Dalton the quarterback this team needs to take it to the next level? It's not looking like it. I like Andy Dalton, but it's not looking like it. You see what's going on in the postseason. He's not taking it to the next level, like Will said. Though I did say that those guys weren't getting open, I would like to see what would happen if A.J. Green was there. But again, it didn't. He wasn't there, and they didn't do anything. So that's all I can go off of.
Yeah, I mean, if he had, well, let's. I mean, since we're playing the what if game, let's say what if Andy Dalton had Tyler Eifert, he had Jermaine Gresham, he had Marvin Jones, he had Mohamed Sanu, and he had A.J. Green. Let's say what if he has those guys healthy for a whole season, and they're able to make, you know, to push for another playoff run next year. What if, you know, will that get them over the top? I mean, if you just look at it. Those five guys, you know, also with Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, that's a pretty lethal offense.
Yeah, it is.
Able to really space it out, and that offensive line is pretty good. So, you know, that's the only reason I'm kind of calling for it, saying that Marvin Lewis has to be put on the clock because they have so much young talent. Do you want to squander those years away kind of in, not in limbo, but just – with you potentially reaching your peak with Marvin Lewis, you know, so that's why I'm saying maybe it's time for a change.
We'll see. My thing is about Marvin. Marvin can't be stubborn about his quarterback position. If it's not working out, you know, may have a competition next season within the quarterback position. And if he does that, maybe I think this team can do something because Marvin is a defensive beast. So on that side of the ball, he has that thing down pat. His defense is typically they ball, you know, lack of a better term, they ball. So anyway, let's go down. To the next team, the game that, you know, everybody talked about, the game that I felt like was the most ridiculous game in the world, the Detroit Lions losing to the Dallas Cowboys.
We all saw the play. That was a horrible call.
Yeah.
Right? And there's no denying that.
Yeah.
But the reality is, after that play, Detroit's defense, you still had the opportunity to stop them.
Yeah.
Not right. Coupled that with
the punter. That punter.
A terrible punt by the punter. Coupled with the offense got the ball back. And had a chance to drive and had a chance to win the game. So I understand that one play potentially changed the game, but let's not act like they didn't have the opportunity to win this game.
They had the opportunity to still had an opportunity to fix it. But again, this is my problem with the whole, all right, that whole game. You watch the drive for them to even score. There were some ticky-tack calls even on that drive. They called defensive holding on things like you were like, wow, like you really, that's a stretch to call. But then you pick up a flag in the initial drive because they called a defensive holding on third down for Beasley to get a first down. And it was he barely got touched. And you're looking at it like, all right, you just picked up a flag of an offensive pass interference. But let's go back to that series, that play.
Okay.
There were two penalties on that play. One, people could say it was a holding. I still think it was pass interference. I don't think it was pass interference. It wasn't holding.
Pass interference.
Then Dez Bryant coming on the field with no helmet on to argue a play coming on the field. That's an automatic 15-yard penalty.
I totally agree with you. But I think in the case with the Dez Bryant, I don't think the refs wanted to
get it. But they already, they didn't
but
want
yeah, to, they already
they
put
already
that, they already
though.
Placed they already
yeah,
placed
they
that
I know what
that,
you're saying
that,
though.
Yeah.
They didn't want that on them.
They didn't
they
want that
did
on
it,
them. But they already did it. They already did it. Some people are having their conspiracy theories was it Blandino, the head of the officials? He was on Jerry Jones' bus, and that's the reason why things are working out. I think more of it has to do with, from my understanding, during the playoffs, it isn't, you know how there's a crew that works every game.
Yeah, you're talking about.
For 16 weeks, that crew works together. They work games. During the playoffs, it's more of a hosh-posh all-star of guys who grade out the highest at their respective positions, line judge, referee, back judge. So the communication isn't always the best because they haven't necessarily worked together and built that level of cohesion. So I think one thing that the NFL may want to do in the future is grade out crews, and whoever the top rated crews, you put those guys to referee the game so there isn't as much confusion on certain calls. But I won't argue the fact that that was a terrible call, but I will couple that with the fact that Detroit did have an opportunity win this game.
They still had a chance. I agree with that. I'm not knocking that at all. But again, let's put it this way. Detroit goes, if they call everything that was supposed to be called on that one series, right, that one play, it's probably first and 10. It's probably first and goal. We're talking about the pass interference, and you tackle on the 15-yard play because that's a 15-yard play because that's a post call. It's not a call that happened during the field of play. It's something that happened after that play was over. So that would probably be the penalty of the PI, which got him to like the 30 or 20-yard line. Then you have the 15-yard penalty. So you're gonna, and essentially, chances are the least is a field goal. So you'll be up six at that point in time, right? The most you need is a field goal a field goal to win the game, even if the Cowboys come back and score a touchdown.
True.
If they score a touchdown, pretty much that game is over. True. So it's like the referees, in my opinion, they definitely hindered this game. They put their fingerprints on this game. And again, we always know watching any sport, basketball, football, baseball, whatever, you don't want any official to dictate a game.
You don't. You really don't. But then again, when there's, I guess it's one of those things. And I'm not a fan. I didn't have a dog in the fight.
No, yeah, I'm not. Yeah.
You want the referees to call a clear violation if there's a violation within the last minutes.
Exactly.
You don't necessarily want them making a pity pat call.
Yeah, exactly.
That call, the Hitchens call, that wasn't a pity pat call. But although you can make the argument that what's his name?
Pettigrew,
he had his face mask.
Mm-hmm. He glanced right.
So he had his face mask, and then Hitchens also was face guarding and pass interference. So, it's one of those things. He could have potentially picked up the flag and been like, or he could have called the double fouls and then been offset, and then you replay the down again.
Yeah.
Which I think some people would have made, just from hearing from everyone, they may have been happier with that. But
they definitely would have been happy with that.
We have to live with the results of it, and the results of it are the Cowboys won, and we get to see a very good rematch of a game that was, week 3 or week 4? Seattle versus Dallas.
No, it's not a rematch. Dallas is playing. You know who Dallas is playing, right?
Oh, Green Bay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
They're playing Aaron Rodgers.
In Lambeau. Aaron Rodgers. It's actually going to be a great game because you have a team that was 8-0 at home versus a team that was 8-0 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So something has to give, and definitely everyone will be tuned in on Sunday to see.
I just feel bad I feel bad for Detroit. Obviously, I'm a diehard Redskins fan, and Dallas winning, isn't the best thing in the world. But I like to think of myself as an individual who can assess something fairly if a team dominates a game. Like when Dallas beat Seattle, there was no cheer. I was like, yeah, Dallas, that's an impressive win. Like they beat Seattle. Like I hate the Dallas Cowboys, but at that point in time, I'm like, that was an impressive win. This Dallas Cowboys team, I think we said on the show, they're like a Super Bowl contender. I said that, like they're a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah,
contending team. But this game against the Lions was something totally different. I just feel like that game was like I watched it and it was like, You don't make that call. Yeah, I've all my years of watching football, I've never seen an official go use it on the mic saying PI, then all of a sudden, and he made his call, then all of a sudden pick up a flag. That doesn't even seem right.
No, it doesn't seem right. It didn't seem right. It didn't sit well with a lot of people, but you know, it's one of those things that you know. And Ndamukong Suh, did you see him at the press conference? He took it really hard.
Yeah.
You know, because I think ultimately he knows that may have been his last game in Detroit.
I know.
May have been his last game in Detroit. He said that he wants to go back, but you know, the economics of it are going to dictate because you have him. Do you have Nick Fairley, who's also a free agent? So you know, the economics are going to dictate where he goes, and there may not be enough.
Franchise him?
You have to pay him like an exorbitant amount of money if you franchise him.
Just don't pay Fairley and pay him. That's an ignominious suit. That's a guy who plays every Sunday. Fairley barely plays. Fairley's always hurt
and out of shape.
Yeah.
But you know, hopefully for my friend to my right, he considers coming to DC, make him happy.
I'll make me happy. I want Sue. I forget. I know all Redskins fans are like, some Redskins fans are like Albert Haynesworth. This dude's a hard worker. You know,
No. It's total. It's not even. It's not even close.
It's not.
This guy doesn't take a down off. He plays through the whistle.
Yeah. This dude is a monster.
It's totally different.
15-yard penalty's gonna happen though. We're used to that. Anyway, that's okay. We talked about the games of last week. Let's preview the games of this coming Saturday and Sunday.
Ravens versus Patriots. Well, Bill Belichick teams that are superiorly talented in the playoffs usually do not live up to the expectation. I think this team, outside of the team that went, 16-0 in the regular season and lost to the Giants, this is by far the most talented team since that team.
I agree.
Because, you know, you have two guys at the cornerback position, Browner and Revis, who can take away one side of the field. On offense, Gronk is playing like his old self, and he's clearly one of the top 7 or 10 players in the league when he's at his optimum level. You have Brandon LaFell, who's a deep threat and who's playing excellent football. They have a second tight end in Tim Wright. You have Julian Edelman. So they have a lot of pieces offensively. Then they also have a run game this year with the run game's pretty good. And, you know, that defense is able to put pressure on the passer. And for all those reasons, you would think that I would say I'm going with the Patriots. But I'm going to switch it up. I just think this is the type of game that John Harbaugh gets the troops blood pumping. And Flacco makes just enough plays to pull an upset, and the Ravens pull this one off.
That's a different pick. I knew you'd pick the Ravens though. The Ravens. I know the Patriots were saying to themselves like, "Dang, we playing the Ravens." It was a bad matchup. I said it last week. Like, this is a team that's going to probably be their toughest fight in the postseason. Because to me, the Ravens know how to put pressure on Tom Brady. Tom Brady doesn't play well against the Ravens defense. The Ravens defense is physical. They know how to hit. Especially now you got Haloti Ngata. There's nobody in that interior who can block a Haloti Ngata. Terrell Suggs looks real good. That combination of Terrell Suggs and Dumerville is something special. So they will put pressure on Tom Brady. But you know what's different from this team, this Patriots team, compared to any other team the Ravens have played in the postseason, is that this team defensively is stacked. That's the difference to me. This team, this Patriots team defensively, it's a defense that rivals their defenses that won the Super Bowl. They haven't had this type of defense, you know, in the postseason in a long time. Even the year they went 16-0, that defense wasn't trail. They were just scoring more than anybody on the field. So, in my opinion, this Patriots team defensively has weapons that that this team is, you know, this Ravens team may not be ready to compete with offensively against this defense. I mean, Darrell Revis, shutdown cornerback. You'll probably see him on Steve Smith. Steve Smith won't get open. He won't get open. Then you got, you know, Browner. Browner probably playing. We're probably playing as Torrey Smith. He'll give up the 5-yard holding call before he gives up a deep ball. And even if Torrey Smith is shows a big play, you're going to put Revis right back on Revis on him, and then that's shut down. Revis is the guy right now that's playing at a high level. You have Patrick Chung who's playing good. You got McCourty out there who's playing good the safety position. This team is stacked defensively. And then my man Vince Wilfer in the middle who can hold it down, stop the run game. This team now can stop the run. Can now stop the pass. This Patriots team, again, like I said before, if they got home field advantage, there was nobody in the AFC that can beat them. I totally believe that with this Patriots team, you could see, and which would be a good matchup, see the Patriots versus the Seattle Seahawks in Super Bowl. That would be a physical matchup if it does happen. It may not shake that way, but if that does happen, that could be a very physical Super Bowl. But this Patriots team, I have to go to Patriots. I think that defense, this defense is something that the Ravens have never seen in the postseason. Now, I do think offensively speaking, the Ravens can Tom Brady will struggle. And it will be a defensive duel, but I think the Ravens the Patriots defense will have a little bit more fight to them.
Okay, well, once again, we're starting off on opposite sides of the ledger.
Of course, yeah.
Let's keep going. Panthers versus Seahawks. This is pretty simple for me. Carolina has to travel to Seattle. Seattle, that defense, that run game, Russell Wilson makes just enough plays with his arms and his legs. I'm going with Seattle.
Man, the upset. You know, people like to be safe. You know what I'm saying? Like to be safe. They went to safe check. Let's say pick. You know what I mean? They don't want to try something dangerous.
Okay.
Me personally, I like to live on the wild side.
Live on the wild side.
You know what I mean? So I'm gonna go with Cam. He's Superman.
Great.
You know what I mean? Cam, this is the moment. Every quarterback has a moment. Cam won his first playoff game. Carolina hasn't lost a game in I don't know how long. Defense is playing good. If they're tackling well again. When these two teams played early in the season, it was a defensive struggle. I believe it was like 13-9 or something like that.
Yeah, excuse me. Yes, it was.
13-9. You know, this defense is even – this Carolina defense and also the Seahawks defense, both of these defenses are playing even better than they did back then. So, and I'm going to go with Cam. I like something about Cam. When people think he can't do it, this is when he does it. You know what I mean? It was like when Auburn played Bama and they were getting blown out. And then all of a sudden, he just turned it on and they came back and won that game. Same thing applies. I think that Cam, when you doubt him, they doubted him getting the division. It was about Atlanta and the Saints. Carolina creeped in. Cam with a car accident helped this team get to this postseason run. So I'm gonna go with Cam.
Okay, great. Cowboys versus Packers. You started off this time.
Yeah, I'm going with Aaron Rodgers. The Cowboys defense is not that good. Aaron Rodgers will pick him apart. I think Cobb will have a big game. I really do. I think Cobb will have a big game. That guy is something special. So I'm gonna go with the Packers over the Cowboys.
I'm going with the Cowboys. Run game, an average defense that's able to make enough, just make one or two plays. That's all it really takes. That run game will keep Aaron Rodgers and that offense off the field. Packers don't have the great. Well, they have one, not even an average. Run defense, but you know Packers can't score at will. You know they can score in under five plays in no time. But I ultimately do think the Cowboys pull this one off in Lambeau.
Yeah, that's gonna be. We'll see how that one pans out. Aaron Rodgers is a bad man. Now he scores a lot. When's the last time the Packers lost at home?
They didn't lose all this year.
That's exactly. That's amazing.
When's the last time Cowboys lost on the road?
Playoffs are beast though. Yeah, you'd rather play at home. I don't care what anybody tell me. I think the Cowboys would rather play at home. Period, rather on the road.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, Tony Romo, bad weather. We'll see how it is. Well, the weather may be all right, though. All right. Colts versus Broncos.
This is easy. I'm going Broncos.
That's what's up. I'm going the Colts.
Wow, so.
I'm going Colts. But why are you going with the Broncos?
I think that the Broncos team, you know, the – had, you know, with them having a week off, Peyton Manning getting an opportunity to be to rest, and also being able having an opportunity to analyze that defense. You have C.J. Anderson, who was playing extremely well at the running back position. Then you couple that with them getting Ronnie Hillman back. Wes Welker, also with Demaryius Thomas. Then Emmanuel Sanders starting to emerge as, you know, he wasn't the deep threat that he is now during that first week when they played Julius Thomas. That defense, even though Indy doesn't have a run game, but that defense stops the run, and they do get to the quarterback. They're able to put a lot of pressure to on the quarterback, particularly up the middle, where Indianapolis is very, very weak. For those all those reasons, coupled with you know, just Peyton Manning being Peyton Manning at home, I'm going with the Broncos.
Okay, I like the Broncos defense, and the defense is playing lights out. And I think I really want to go with the Broncos, but I'm just not the way Peyton Manning is playing football right now. I'm just not happy with it. You know, I just think he should be a better. To me, he should be a better player at the quarterback position. What he did with against Cincinnati, the Raiders. You know, they beat the Raiders, but he should have played stronger. His arm doesn't look strong. I think it's time. This is Luck's time. You know, usually in the second round, the last couple of seasons, you saw Luck getting blown out in the second round. His team up in the Colts been blown out in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is the point in time now. You look at it where, you know, I feel like this team will compete in this game, and if they compete, they should win. They should win this game. So I'm gonna go with the Colts. Andrew Luck taking this game to the next level, getting to the AFC Championship game, and playing Tom Brady in the championship.
All right, the
AFC Championship.
Well, if we just going off of history, if I'm the Colts, the Panthers, the Packers, and the if I'm the Patriots, the Panthers, the Packers, and the Colts, I would be concerned off your previous performance.
1-3, right?
Yes.
Don't worry. And look, one week was that was like last week. You know what I mean? So it's a new week.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
You know what I mean? It's two that we in. What year are we in?
2015.
2015 is a whole different beast, dog.
Okay.
That was 2014.
All right.
2015 changes. I'm 0-0.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you. And when we come back, we'll discuss the new hit for 2015, which is the college playoffs that started on New Year's Day.
It's the Urban Sports Thing
for ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always had to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
This one's for you and me, living out our dreams. We're all right where we should be. With my arms out wide, I open my eyes, and now all I wanna see is a sky full of lighters. A sky full of lighters.
Time you hear this, I will have already spiraled up. I would never do nothing to let you cowards f*** my world up. If I was you, I would duck or get struck like lightning fighters. Keep
chill it, M. Chill it, son. Had a dream, I was king. Knew I had a dream. James Winston had a dream. And he let me down. He lost to Oregon. James Winston lost to Oregon. He was supposed to outplay Mariota. Really? I'm not going to lie. We're going to talk about that, too. Because that dude showed me absolutely nothing. But let's talk about that first game. Florida State, Oregon. College playoffs. And again, our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904.
I'll say this. Jameis Winston made a statement after the game that they beat themselves. And there is some truth to that. You take away those two fumbles. You take away his fumble. And you take away this team being able to execute in the red zone. I know that's, you know, a bunch of what ifs, and I always say if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. But, you know, if you just look at the game.
This ninja didn't just say that.
What?
And that's wrong.
That's what I always say.
No, it's clean. I'm not saying it's not dumb. I'm saying, like, dang, this dude got issues.
Go ahead, continue.
But if you take all those things into perspective, this was a relatively close case, excluding those things. If Florida State's able to convert in the red zone, you know, it's a little bit closer. And the kicker, I don't want to butcher his last name.
For Florida State?
Yeah.
Missed that long kick?
Yeah, he usually never misses.
But that was a long kick, though.
Yeah, it was a long kick. It's a relatively closer game. But ultimately, Oregon was the better team for that night. If you ask me, Mariota still didn't show me a whole lot to impress me for everyone to be like, oh, he's definitely the number one overall pick, or he's the best quarterback in the draft. Not in my opinion. I still think that Jameis Winston threw his guys open, but sometimes his guys didn't come down with it for him, like the Rashad Green catch. Marcus Mariota was thrown to a lot of open receivers and open windows. Even though I'm not going to take anything away from the kid, he played a good game, but I just didn't come away overly impressed with he's the next star franchise quarterback in the NFL.
Let me be real. One, they did. Florida State got blown out. The turnovers to me were the thing that definitely hindered them. They were a set like that right after the the half, they came back. They were driving the ball, doing well. The freshman running back was doing his thing, and he had that fumble. They were going to score a touchdown. They looked like they were about to score a touchdown, and that touchdown would have gave them the lead. So then that changes the whole dynamic of the game. But that fumble, once he fumbled, it was a problem. I'm sorry, that's what ended that fumble, because you could tell that the defense was starting to get tired, and they needed that momentum. They needed that beat. They needed an upbeat spirit. Like, we're up. All we got to do is hold this team down. Our offense don't get the ball. They're going to score again. You know what I mean? That's what you could tell. But that fumble really jacked him up. Now, to go to Mariota, nothing impressed me about Mariota. He was a gimmick player. What I mean by that is spread offense, throw a screen, touchdown. It was nothing special what he did. Now, for NFL scouts to say he's better than Jameis Winston, what do you see to get you that feeling that he's going to do something special in the NFL in terms of throwing the ball? Now, granted, as a scrambler, he is good. As a scrambler, he does some positive things out there as a quarterback, as a scrambler. But in terms of a guy who can like read defenses, assess who's open, lead, throw people open, he's not that guy. I didn't see that guy. I didn't see that type of quarterback.
No, I didn't either. I saw a guy who plays in a great system, who has some pretty good intangibles. But if you're asking me, is he the next great franchise quarterback? No, I still think Jameis Winston on the next level is a far better quarterback than him. He does a lot of the things that you want a star quarterback to do. It's just that he has a little tainted past.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and you know, Jameis Winston thinking about staying in school. I don't think there's anything wrong with that if he wants to stay in school.
Yeah, get his education.
Yeah, stay in school.
Enjoy. I mean, like I tell people all the time, college is the last time you'll be free.
Uh-huh.
Because after that, it's bills, there's responsibilities, you have to show up for your 9 to 5.
Which sucks.
And you have other adult responsibilities. So if he wants to stay in college and wants to continue to matriculate through college, and he's
matriculate, like the word.
Yeah. And he's
That's
still
a T-word.
Yeah, he's going to classes and doing the things he has to do and being responsible, I say by far let him go.
Matriculation.
Let him stay in college.
Matriculation. That's
yes, sir.
Matriculation.
Well, nah. Matriculate.
I like matriculation. I think I can. Can I make that into a word?
You sure can. You can do whatever you want, buddy.
But you know what? Yeah. At the end of the day, I think James. I mean, I agree with my man Will T. Jameis Winston is definitely the better quarterback in this draft. His only issue is that he likes crab legs. But once he gets that out of his system, he'll be fine.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But let's go down to the other game. The upset, pretty much the main upset of the playoffs. Ohio State beating Alabama.
Yeah, we both stated that we thought that Nick Saban would give the freshman quarterback the blues. We thought he would throw all types of defensive formations and schemes at him that would mess his head up. But we saw that wasn't the case. One thing I will say to my credit, I did state that Alabama would struggle against the run. and they did struggle against the run. Let's go back. What?
We getting each other credit?
Who'd
you pick to win?
I picked Alabama.
Your credit's done then.
Yeah, I mean, just like, you know, you went 1-3, but you gave yourself credit, leader of men, when you text me.
I know.
I can give myself a little bit of credit.
Go ahead, continue.
Okay, thank you, pretty much.
I'll let you pat yourself on the back.
I patted myself on the back just a little bit, just a smidgen. I watched some of this game. I didn't watch all of it. Ohio State clearly looked like the better team. This wasn't the most talented Nick Saban Alabama team.
It was a 14-6. I mean, Alabama's
21-6. Yeah, that's when I turned it up. When they turned it off, when they went up 21-6, I was like, Alabama's got this. Let me just go ahead and get a start on the night. But Ohio State.
That means alcohol.
Nah, man. I was in the bed. I went.
You said started the night.
Start on the night, man.
Let me get a start.
Yeah, let me get a start on my sleep.
Oh, my bad. Thought you said start night. My bad. Okay, go ahead. Continue.
We'll get to see a matchup that, you know, neither one of us predicted, which is Oregon versus Ohio State. I think it's going to be a pretty good game. It doesn't have that star power.
It doesn't. I think it's not the game people wanted to see.
No, it's not the game that people wanted to see, but once again, it goes to show that maybe that this college football playoff selection committee did the right thing.
No, they did the right thing. I think Ohio State showed them they did the right thing.
Yeah.
With Ohio State being Alabama, they showed the whole world that they knew what they were doing, to be real with you, seriously.
Yeah, because, you know, even though TCU won their last game, 55-3, mm-hmm. they won by 52 points. You know, Ohio State, they blew out Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. And, you know, you had some people who were really upset and thought TCU should have been in it. But in reality is, if you look at all four of the teams, who are you going to take out? Mm-hmm. They made the right decision. And we get to see a game which I think with two teams that play a spread offense that is going to be highly entertaining.
And who do you have winning this game?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Oregon to win the national championship.
I'm going to go with the best coach between the two. I believe in coaches. That's one thing I do. I really believe in coaches. And Urban Meyer just showed me when he beat Alabama that, you know, he's one of the best coaches. Coach has one of the better coaches' minds in football, period. Not just college football, but football, period. To beat an Alabama team with an Ohio State that's not as strong. I know it's not the strongest Bama team, but it's a strong team, though. It's not the strongest Bama team, but it's a strong team. And to do it with your third-string quarterback?
Yeah, who's a true freshman?
It's a true freshman. It's impressive. Okay, you can't deny it. Like, this Urban Meyer is a hell of a coach. So I'm going to go Urban Meyer in this game. But though it does, I won't lie to you, but I can see why you go Oregon. Pac-10 versus Big Ten, usually that's not a good matchup for a Big Ten team. The Pac-10 speed usually scares off a Big Ten team. But this Ohio State team is a different team. Again, Urban Meyer coached in the SEC, so you know he's all about speed.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I was just going to say, even though, you know, they're in Buckeye country, Urban Meyer, former SEC coach, he built this team like an SEC team with lots of speed on the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball at the skill position. So, like I said, I think it's going to be a better matchup than we anticipate. It'll be viewer friendly, and the only thing I'll be upset about is the game's going to run from like 8 to midnight. So that's going to be it. I know why from a revenue perspective for marketing and advertisement, but it's too damn long.
Yeah, way too damn long.
For a Monday night, it's too damn long.
Too long. And college games go over long. Yeah, college games are longer than NFL games.
Yeah, because the advertising.
After the first down.
Yeah, so it's too damn long. But I'm going to try to make it through. I mean, I'll be up, but, you know.
I'll be up, but it's still long.
Yeah, it's still too damn long.
Yeah, anyway. It's about time for another commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about, the NBA, and it's a segment always contributed to my homie
Fallen Soldier
Mega. So we call it Mega's NBA. It's the urban sports thing
for ages. And this commercial break won't be too damn long.
Yeah, it won't. For ages, you said for ages already.
Yep.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Wait for it. You dig?
Deuces.
My life It's full of statistics. Thing is, I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't, because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
We're back from commercial break. We're having issues with the music beds and whatnot. I wonder if I want to see. I don't even know. We can go hard in paint.
We got to get our intern on that.
Our intern?
Yeah, our intern.
We got an intern?
Yeah, we got an intern, man. We have a whole staff. We have researchers. We have an intern. We have engineers. We in a studio.
We have a whole staff, though?
Yeah, like, we have a whole staff.
Like, real talk, true story?
Yes, true story.
We're in the fudge, we get a staff. Lord, man, Wilson, we got a staff. Damn, I'm really mad at this. Like my phone is like I use like people. I use my phone to kind of like do the commercials and do like the music and stuff. And my phone just shut off on me. It's like my other phone though. It's like the phone my iPhone 4. I have a 5 now. I'm getting my business out there. I don't even care.
You are.
You know what I mean? Like it's like annoying. And I had to turn this thing off. And it's all. I wish you all could see it. I have like a shattered glass. It looks like the dumbest phone in the world. But anyways, Mega's NBA. Mega would want me talking about this crap. He'd be like, "What?" He'd be like, "Kenzo, man, shut up and keep it moving." So Mega, I'm gonna do what you told me to do, man. The Knicks, Cavs, and OKC made a blockbuster trade.
I wouldn't say blockbuster.
Blockbuster, like tremendous trade. I'm talking about the Knicks trade. The cool shooting, Jay Smooth. J.R. Smith, he's a club bopper too. J.R. Smith and Shumpert to the Cavs. OKC gets Waiters. Deion, I can't pass the ball, Waiters. And the Knicks get Lance Thomas, Lou Amundson, and Alex Kirk.
Basically, the Knicks got cap space because none of those guys will be on the roster.
You know who I wish OKC would have traded?
Who?
Lamb, because I feel like they're ruining his career.
Lamb would have been a nice addition for New York, mm-hmm. A young piece that they could add to their bench and help that as they try to retool for going forward. Mm-hmm. I think for Cleveland, it's a potential win mm-hmm. because they get something they really needed, which is a guy who could defend on the wing in Iman Shumpert. Mm-hmm. I've always stated, and I will continue to state, I think you gave up too early on Wiggins because Wiggins didn't bring something that's indispensable and that this team has clearly is needed, mm-hmm. as you can see from their slow start, which is aggressive wing defense. He's able to take away one of your top offensive wing players, and you don't really need to create a whole bunch of run a bunch of plays from him mm-hmm. for him. So Iman Shumpert gives you long range shooting and. Good weak defense on the wing. J.R. Smith, that's the wild card because you don't know if J.R. Smith doesn't want to be in Cleveland, his attitude will show. It'll show in his play. It'll show in his body language and it'll show in practice. J.R. Smith is a native. He wanted to be in New York to be around his family. He really loved the atmosphere of New York, mm-hmm. that everything New York had to offer. So it'll be interesting to see, does he keep his head and will, you know, LeBron and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, will they be able to kind of tame J.R. Smith and really bring him into the reins and get him to buy in to playing winning basketball, even though Cleveland isn't playing winning basketball at this point. OKC, they get Deion Waiters, a guy who hasn't met a shot he doesn't like.
He can't pass.
To save his life. If his life, if someone put a gun to his head and said, "I'm going to off you,"
like that, Bama,
he wouldn't care. He's still going to put it up. But I'm interested to see how it's going to work out with him at OKC because we all know he's a gunner, mm-hmm. and when he's on the floor with a KD and Russell Westbrook. Is he going to take shots away from them? What'll be his attitude? Will he buy into what Scott Brooks is trying to do offensively when he's coming off the bench with him and Reggie Jackson? you know, will he buy into what they want to, will he buy into what they want to do? And, you know, can he be tamed and still be that offensive spark, almost like Vinny the Microwave Johnson off of the bench for Detroit when they were making that championship run?
Nah, for me, I like the move for the Cavs. I think J.R. Smith bringing him to Cleveland, pairing him up with LeBron James could be something really special. J.R. Smith is a good set shooter, set 3-point shooter. Yeah, he likes to take he takes some bad shots. That's a given. But also he's a better spot up shooter compared to Deion Waiters. So to me, he's a better fit for LeBron James, a better fit for Kyrie Irving. Obviously, this Cavs team still needs a big due to the fact that Virgil went down for the whole season. But again, you corner the market, I think. You get a shooter what this team needs, and you get a defender in Iman Shumpert. They need a defender. The defense hasn't been good, so you got a good defender in Shumpert. This team, I definitely like the acquisitions for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Okay, see, I'm a little confused. Again, you have Lamb on this team. I think Lamb is a good player. A player who can score about 20. If you give him the opportunity, he can score about 13 points a game off the bench. And to me, he plays more under control. Deion Waiters is more of a selfish basketball player, so that could hinder the chemistry of OKC. They're making a good run right now. They're just getting healthy, making a good run. They found young talent in Perry Jones III. You obviously got Reggie Jackson, some guys that help out with the bench. You got Adams. So you have guys in OKC that's helped out this team. You're adding in a guy in Waiters who, like Will mentioned, who just doesn't pass the ball. It's a guy who doesn't like to pass the ball. And I've heard comparisons to James Harden. They can use him as James Harden. James Harden's a guy who passes the ball. You can run offense. So you can run your offense through James Harden. You can't run your offense through a Deion Waiters.
Three of the biggest ball hogs in the league: Nick Young,
Swaggy P,
Jordan Crawford, and Deion Waiters.
Is Jordan Crawford still in the league?
Well, when he was in the league, over the past 5 years, those are three of the biggest ball hogs. Guys who never saw a shot they did not like. Like I said, if I had to rank it, I would probably say I think the Knicks came out the best because you got rid of J.R. Smith's contract. That was $6.5 million for this year and next year. So you get all that dead cap space as you try to rebuild your team. And also it takes away a talented player who could have potentially helped you win a game or two. And we all know that the Knicks are pretty much tanking for number one. So they won from the perspective of, you know, unloading cap space and helping to build for the future. Number two, I would have to go with Cleveland because, you know, they got the type of player they needed. And Iman Shumpert, a strong wing defender who can also who's a pretty decent long range shooter. And you get J.R. Smith, who could potentially be a wild card for you, a guy off the bench or even starting who could average close to 16, 18 points a game. And then last but not least, OKC, only because the Deion Waiters dynamic, you have a glut of talent at the wing position with Robertson, with Waiters, with Perry Jones, and also with Lamb. So, you know, I see why you did it because of Reggie Jackson is going to be a free agent this off season. So you want to kind of provide some insurance, but I don't think this is the right insurance for you.
Yeah, it's not definitely the right move, in my opinion. Again, you have Lamb. You have a guy who you saw when you gave him opportunity, he scored. You saw what Perry Jones III can do. So, I mean, I'm not really a fan about what they're doing over there in OKC in terms of that move, but we'll see how it pans out. I don't want to keep dwelling over it. We'll see how it pans out. Let's go into Josh Smith. Josh Smith, we didn't talk about it, but he was released by the Detroit Pistons, who have been playing better ball ever since he left.
They won six in a row without him.
Yeah, which I figured they would. They're a better team without him.
Another ball hog.
Yeah, and just not an intelligent basketball player.
But has all the athletic gifts in the world. Mm-hmm. 6'9". Supreme
audio's back.
Athleticism, a guy who fills up the stat sheet. But when the offense, you try to run it through him, the ball stops because he either A, doesn't make the right pass, or he B, takes a terrible 3-point or 18-footer jump shot rather than slashing rather than putting the ball on the floor or going to the post for to get buckets. But I do think because of his style of play, he's a guy who likes to shoot threes. It could potentially work for him with the Rockets. You know, Dwight Howard, he needs essentially four guys to play on the perimeter for him, for it to work out for him. Josh Smith is a willing weak side defender. So he gives you that off ball. If his head's in the game and he's on top of his rotations, a guy who can come from the weak side and block shots. And he's also a guy who can hit the offensive rebound, the offensive boards for you.
Like, so for me, I look at Josh. I mean, Josh Smith is a good defender, so he will help this team defensively. Obviously, you know, he's excited. He's playing with Dwight Howard again. These guys played AAU ball in Atlanta together. They're tight. Was it AAU or high school ball?
AAU
ball. Yeah. So
Atlanta Celtics.
Yeah, exactly. So they're tight. So obviously, you're playing with a guy you're familiar with. That makes it's going to bring some excitement to it for Dwight and him. Again, this team is run by and held down by James Harden anyway. So it's a good move for the team if done correctly. If he doesn't go out gunning 83s, if Kevin McHale could say, okay, you know what, Josh, I don't want you shooting any threes. I want you in the post. I'm going to work with you and make you a better post player. Therefore, I'm going to take advantage of what you have athletically and also work on your game in the post to a point where maybe we can make you a double-double, a beast in terms of an effective post player and a guy. We already know he can rebound, but a guy who can put up, make easy baskets, get him easy baskets in the post. So it could work, but I don't see that being Josh Smith's temperament. He just hasn't been that person yet, and he's been the same since he's been in the league.
No, I agree with you on his temperament. He showed you exactly what he is all throughout his time in the league. Detroit thought that by signing him, they would be able to change him. They could convince him to not take those long jump shots and, to move the ball offensively. But Stan Van Gundy, who ultimately had final say in basketball operations, was just like, I would rather pay this guy, I think, what is it, $27 million, to not be on the roster, to have him on the roster. So that, if I'm Josh Smith, you have to look at it. You have to take some time to reflection and be like, these guys are paying me $20+ million to not play there anymore.
Yeah, that says a lot.
It says a lot about you as a basketball player.
All right, so why wasn't he successful? Why wasn't he successful in Detroit? Was it just because, like, what we just mentioned?
I think you couple all those things, and also you have two other guys who are young and up as Thomas
Drummond Starnes, and Monroe.
Drummond and Monroe. Monroe is a free agent, unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. Drummond looks like he could potentially be one of the next up and coming great centers, one of the next best young centers in the game. So that essentially put Josh Smith at the three, and he's ill equipped to play the three. Even though he has some of the physical tools, he just didn't have...
He didn't shoot the ball well enough to be a three.
Yeah, he doesn't have the skill to play the three. So, ultimately, when you Van Gundy, you had to make a decision. And that decision was to go with the two young guys who will have more promise at this point in their careers than Josh Smith, a guy who you know exactly what he is and what he doesn't and isn't going to do.
So, which I totally agree. I like that point you did make with Monroe and Drummond, because Detroit has an opportunity if this is coached correctly to be a one of the powerhouses in the East down the road. If they keep Greg Monroe, who's still young, and Drummond, we're talking about a 4-5 combination. Both guys average a double double, can average a double double.
Yeah,
and you don't get that often in today's NBA. That's a problem. You see that? You see how that formula works in Memphis, right?
Just to piggyback off what you said, they kind of play off each other because Greg Monroe is, with his basketball IQ and his passing ability, he's a guy who could play at the high post while Drummond plays down on the block.
Exactly. So they work real well together. So it's a combination that can help this. You can see this team definitely do some special things down the road. Now it's just to see if Stan Van Gundy hone in a Jennings to play the way he wants him to play and things of that sort. He may need a new point guard. He can still rock with Jennings, but he has to have Jennings play a particular way for this team to be successful. But let's go. Let's talk about another acquisition, Rajon Rondo, who right now with the Dallas Mavericks, he's there. This team has been 6-2 since the trade. Do you look at Rondo as an elite point guard, especially what's going on right now in Dallas?
I think he is. And I swear we had this conversation.
No, we didn't. Okay.
Okay.
I knew I always talk bad about Rondo, so it makes it seem different.
Okay. Well, I think that Rondo is still one of the upper echelon point guards. He's a tremendous playmaker, has the physical tools to be an elite defender when he wants to defend. He came out and made a statement prior to the Mavericks playing the Celtics that he hasn't played defense in years. You know, they usually put Avery Bradley on their best wing player and they allow him to play off. But Rondo's going to come to this team and he knows what he has to do. He knows that he doesn't need to score. He knows he just needs to control the offense and play good defense and maybe knock down a 15-footer or two on occasion when no one's playing off of him, and he'll be just fine with all the offensive weapons that they have. I'll let you go on your tirade about Rondo.
Rondo eventually will be exposed. When it comes to playoff basketball, it's fine right now. I mean, you know, they're 6-2. They played some teams that make it to have their record dictated into 6-2. I believe they beat like the Cavs without LeBron James. They beat
the Wizards. They beat the Wizards by almost 30.
By 30?
By like 20. And when the Wizards were on their five-game road
trip. Dallas, right?
Yeah, road trip.
Yeah, home games. All right, so I'm not really worried about this team.
Okay.
The Mavericks team, but when Rondo gets back to being playing the true good teams, I think they'd be OKC without Durant or something like that. When this team plays the real West, Rondo will be who I thought he was, who I thought he is. Rondo's a good point guard. He's a very good point guard. He's not elite to me. You see what's going on. You see, it's funny. There's the people that people consider better, that Rondo was better than. You now see it's all coming to light that these point guards are better than Rondo. They are. They're like Steph Curry, way better than Rondo. Chris Paul, it's not even a comparison. You know what I mean? To me, John Wall's better than Rondo.
Yeah, I'm not denying you that, but for what he does as far as a guy who's a facilitator and a playmaker and a guy who just plays good defense, I think
he's an arrogant dude.
Well,
he's an arrogant dude who thinks too highly of himself.
I'll say this. The guys you mentioned are stars who can lead their team. Rondo is a championship piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, he's a piece. He's a piece guy. He's not a leader of men. You know what I mean?
Here you go, a leader of men.
He's not a leader of men. He's not like one. No, because you're right. I like that term. Leader of men, like Stephen Curry. Steph Curry can lead his team. It's not because his antics or how he talks. It's his play. He gets people involved. He's a point guard. Chris Paul is a leader of men. Rondo is just a wannabe leader. When I look at Rondo, I look at a poser. A guy who wants the role.
You are extremely tough on him.
He wants the role, but he's not real. You know, what's that Jay-Z line? He's all right, but he's not real. That's what he is. He's all right. He's all right, but he's not real.
I think he's proven that he's the real deal by helping to get
the Boston Celtics.
Yes, those Celtics.
Yeah, it's called Ray Allen, Jesus Shuttlesworth, Kevin Garnett, Be the Big Ticket, Paul Pierce. Homie, you the truth. Rondo, you're Tito. Bye-bye.
Okay, I mean, we'll see how it plays out. You know, we have a lot of basketball left. We haven't even gotten to the All-Star break.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes, man. I definitely think that he's going to be a guy, I'm not saying he's an All-Star. But I'm saying he's a piece that will help take them further than they would have gotten with Jameer Nelson.
Jameer Nelson is one of the better point guards in the NBA, and he should get more credit.
Okay, all
right. Right now. It's about time to go hard in the paint. Paint. What you like? What? Yeah. I'm going to go first.
Oh, okay.
You want to go first? Go first. Go ahead.
guy I'm pick, even though his first game Monday wasn't that great, but I'm going to go with a total sleeper. I'm going to go with Cole Aldrich of the New York Knicks, the center.
I like him. He's been got some time, too. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, so I'm going with Cole Aldrich. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to put up double-doubles throughout the rest of this week.
Yes, what's up? Like Greg Oster tag.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
I know, that's like kind of racist. I mean,
no, he did his play, his look and his play.
The white center, yeah.
His look and his play, they play just like each other.
I suck in life, yeah. Hey, I'm going to pick a dude that just got traded from the New York Knicks, and it's going to be the best move of his life. J.R. Smith. It's going to be like he played in Denver again. He's going to play for a winning team, though. Like when George Karl was coaching him, and he was actually winning, it's going to be a nice situation for him. He's playing with LeBron James, an unselfish dude. He's going to feed off LeBron, and truth be told, he's a guy who can actually pass the ball in a pick and roll situation, high screen and roll situation. This is going to be a very good play for this team. So I'm going to go with J.R. Smith. I can see him in the first game dropping about 15, 20 points and doing some damage with this team. So, again, J.R. Smith, that dude will be going hard in the paint.
Okay, there you go. We both gave our hard in the paint picks for this week. That brings us to the end of the show.
Yes.
It was a pretty good show for Open 2015. I'm proud of it.
I'm always proud of shows we do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm proud of all the shows we do, man. It's a good Open show for 2015. You know what I mean? I mean, Will went 1-3 in 3-1 in 2014 NFL playoffs. I went 1-3 in 2014 NFL playoffs. Now we scratched the surface 0-0.
Okay, I thought that you would just go for the whole playoffs, but
no,
you
know, I'm not.
You include the combined record.
No.
2014
I'm not doing it. No, I didn't. Cause I wasn't successful.
So you just want to hit the reset button when you're not successful.
You're right.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Cause, you know, I just want to make sure you were,
because they say this, and I don't like. I'm not going to quote. I don't like Jordan and Kobe, but I will say this. Every score, you know, when you miss a last second shot, you got to forget it. It never happened, because you know, if you keep thinking you missed that last second shot, you won't make the next one. So I omit it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So in this situation, sir, I don't remember what happened in 2014.
All right.
Because 2015 is the year that I dominate.
Okay, we'll see, man. But once again, just want to thank you all for listening to us, our first show of 2015. We're fans just like you. You the guys are the reason we do this, just to give the fans a voice. And we appreciate you spending, 2 hours
listening
to us?
Yeah,
2 hours listening to us. And we hope during that time, wherever you were able to catch us, whether it's live or on podcast,
Podbeam,
that you enjoyed it, and you'll
iTunes.
Tune back. Yeah, or iTunes, that you'll be back next week to support us.
Yes, you will. You sure will. Anyway, it's the Urban Sports Saint.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces. Ron, take us out.